In all affairs, it's a healthy thing now and then to hang a question mark on the things you have long taken for granted. Bertrand Russell. Bending, Not Breaking, the live-action episodes. The North. Welcome back to another episode of Bending Not Breaking. I am Sunshine.
And I am Ben.
And it has been a little while. It has been a little bit of time because life happens.
Life happens.
And
it's true.
But we are committed to finishing the season.
That's right.
And so we took a little bit of a break for about a month.
Yep.
And we're back
to
do our last two episodes for the live action season of Avatar: The Last Airbender, which aired in February.
Yeah.
But it takes us time to watch and process and understand.
Turns out we did a whole lot of processing for the original series before we ever did a podcast. Watched it multiple times before.
Yeah, very much so. And now we're at episode 7, so this is already coming to a close.
That's true. Yeah.
We're
on the last
fourth. Last little bit.
Yeah. This is the 7/8 of the live action series.
And I got to tell you, it's a show.
It is a live action show. Yeah. You nailed it.
Yeah.
That's it.
The reason I was gone for a month was I ended up doing like 2 weeks in doing national parks.
Mm.
And so I would go up to the top of peaks and I would yell at lightning storms.
Yep. Crying. Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful moments.
Yeah. Why would you do this to me?
Yeah.
Give me more.
Never got to lightning bend.
You've never held back before, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But it was fun.
That's exciting.
It does look. So we, like, one of the places, you know, I went to Utah, so we did the Big Five out there.
Mm.
And it is like a whole lot of earth bending has taken place out there. Like, that's what a lot of the formations end up looking like. And so it's a very cool experience.
Earth bent state.
Yeah. We went and saw arches. That was awesome.
That's pretty cool.
But again, a lot of it is like, oh.
The pictures were
this
cool.
This kind of feels like Earth Kingdom
this
territory.
Super earthy. Yeah.
So, worth doing. If you've not gone to Zion National Park in Utah, or Arches, or Canyonlands, or Bryce.
They're all
worth it. Yeah, I now have that itch. I now have the national park itch.
Yeah, they're fun.
They're fun. They're cool. You're just seeing parts of the country you typically don't get to see.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I think next year I'm going to try to hit up the Florida national parks.
Everglades.
And Biscayne and Dry Tortugas.
All right. I don't know much about any of those except for the Everglades, but...
They exist?
Yeah. That's what I've learned that now. That's big. That's big news. I've been lazy all month. Lazy.
First of all, lazy is not a real thing. That's just what people in a capitalistic society want you to think you are.
Yes, I have been resting for a month, and I am tired of resting.
Which is great, but isn't what a unique perspective, because a lot of times people get this idea of, oh, you just want to rest and do nothing for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And you're just being lazy. And the reality is like, no, I've been working for 4 years straight, nonstop, with little time off.
Yep.
And now I've completed that task.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take a rest. And a month later, you're like, all right, I'm done resting. I'm ready to
be moving.
Ready to do stuff.
Ready to do things.
And I think that that's a more accurate depiction of how people tend to be. When you get the rest you need, you're ready to go do things to help your community and it's just lovely.
Yeah.
And you're ready to go do those things.
I am. I am ready to do those things. It's exciting. I'm also officially a licensed therapist in the state of North Carolina now. So
you can be my first guest on this podcast.
Yeah, no big deal or anything, but now I am credible, which is for better or worse.
All right, let's go re-record
everything that I've said up to now is up for debate. But
we'll restart again.
Yep. Yeah. Yikes. Anyway, today, I presume you remember the lens that we're talking about.
I do. I wrote it down.
That's good.
Bold of you to presume such things.
Is it? I mean, we discussed it ahead of time.
We did. It's presumption.
It's presumption. Yes.
And there's some really interesting moments of that through this episode.
There are.
But we won't talk about any of that until you give us a 30-second recap.
Whoa.
On your mark. Get set. Go.
Okay, so Lieutenant G is fooled by Zhao. Zuko gets blown up, and then the gang arrives in the north, and then Azula fights prisoners to impress Ozai, and then Sokka is smitten and is like, ooh, ice cream. And then Katara learns healing magic and is like, no, I want to blow things up. And then Han and Sokka buddy up, and then like Paku and Arnook sad, and Aang's not a combat specialist, and then Kurok is a sad, angry boy, and then Yue Sokka kissy kissy, and then Aang sad, angry boy, and then Azula stands up to Ozai with lightning, and then Katara fights Paku, and the Fire Nation arrives.
Yeah, perfect. Done. Well done. You covered it all.
These episodes are long. It's hard to catch everything.
It's not.
Well, you have a fighting episode next episode, so you're going to be fine with your recap.
Hey, sorry about your poor decisions.
I need to choose better. I need to choose odd evens next time.
Yeah, next time. Yeah. All the fighting will take place in odd episodes.
Yep. Oh, well. All right. What's a presumption?
What is a presumption?
Let's presume nothing.
An idea that is taken to be true and often used as the basis for other ideas, although it is not known for certain.
Yeah, you start making a plan based off one thing, and then you realize that one thing that you plan for is not actually real.
Yeah. Or behavior perceived as arrogant, disrespectful, and transgressing the limits of what is permitted or appropriate.
Ooh, well, that's definitely a wider lens to scope out in this episode.
Yeah, I'll say that's not really where my mind went when I was looking for things.
Like, the presumption of that person.
Correct.
Right.
Which is really, you are presuming that you are acting appropriately and you are incorrect.
It's like a label.
That's the idea, I think, around that judgment. Definition.
Yeah.
You are presuming that you can get away with these behaviors.
Yes, yes, precisely, precisely. Yeah, there's a lot of presumption in this episode. Where do you see it first?
So one of the first moments that pops up to me is the idea that you have the elders of this northern tribe that are very, like, excited for these people to be here.
Ugh.
The reception is so warm.
Oh, yeah. We're so glad you're here.
And the presumption of, like, the Avatar's here. We're
saved.
We are excited for your fighting ability and offensive threat that you're going to bring to this battle. And then being like, guys.
Actually.
Pacifist.
actually. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because, you know, in the really, like, backwards is two on the nose, I think. They're like, oh, you don't know how to fight. Maybe that should have been your focus before you got here. Like,
my guys, it's been 2 months.
Yeah.
And I was in an ice block for 100 years.
And I didn't have anyone to teach me. And anyway, and then he turns around and walks away. And they're like, it seems like we won't be able to count on the Avatar for this. Like, and it's just this really, like, passive aggressive, like, clearly still within earshot. Like, I don't know. That felt awkward.
It does feel awkward. And man, how often do we set ourselves up for disappointment because of our own expectations a situation?
That's so Buddhist too.
And then we blame other people when those things don't meet our expectations.
Yeah.
And part of this is like, am I doing this with this show? I hope not. And like, but like, how often does that happen in, I expect that this media is going to go a specific way and it didn't, so it's bad.
Well, you've told me that before. Like, I think about a ton of different books that I really, really love that have been adapted to terrible movies. And you're like, I liked it. And I'm like, it's the worst. And you're like, no, it was fine. It was good. And I'm like, terrible movie. And I think a lot of it is because of my expectations going in. And you had no expectations. And so you're like, cool. Right?
I watched The Giver recently for like the second time, and it's not amazing.
No, it's not good,
but I would say like it's fine. Like, you know what I mean?
Sure.
So I think that's where, so I'm like, yeah, it was fine. It was on in a hotel that I was in at one point, and it was like, oh, The Giver. And then I forgot Taylor Swift was in it.
Taylor Swift is what? I don't remember that.
She plays like the flashback person who was initially supposed to be The Giver and failed.
Oh, yeah.
And that's Taylor Swift in the movie. And I've read the book.
Yeah.
And enjoy the book.
Yeah, in like fourth grade.
And then this, I think I read it recently, like within the last 3 years. Anyways, so it was just like, oh, this movie is fine.
Yeah.
But if you're like, I love The Giver as a book.
Yeah.
And I have all these expectations of a movie. Like, I would say that I didn't have really high expectations for this show.
Yeah.
And tried to come in with an open mind.
Yeah.
And then there are still things where I'm like,
nope.
That was a weird
decision.
But even outside of media, I'm going to go visit my family and it's going to go like X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then it doesn't because families are messy.
Yeah.
And then, all right, is it someone's fault that this happened or did I just have
unrealistic
expectations or even realistic ones that were
presumptive?
Just swayed by the nuance of people, right? And so that happens.
Yep.
But yeah, it's weird to make someone feel bad because your expectations weren't met on something that they were never clear that those were the expectations that you were having.
It's hard, right? This is the master waterbender of an entire society and the chief, like the leader of this entire society.
Who's
right?
Like kind of warm and empathetic.
I appreciated the changes
like
from
the
Paku.
Tone down of like,
no, I definitely appreciated some
grumpy
of those
old man who was like, oh, I was in love with your grandmother.
Yeah.
Like, but this time it's just like, yeah, women don't fight.
Yeah. I definitely think the shift from putting all of the burden on Paku in the animated show to deliver the message of women don't fight to they were able to like expand that a little bit and create Yagoda and have Yagoda deliver that message.
Yeah.
Which it sounds very different when that message is being delivered from a woman elder in the tribe than it does when it's only coming from this male elder.
Yep. And I really enjoy healing is an important
and
has been a part of our culture for years, and it's an honorable thing. And I even like the nuance around Katara being like, totally
agree.
It is. And I also want to hit people. And so I think that it's really unique because it wasn't, hey, I'm here to train. It was, your training will start with Yagoda, and we're really excited to have you.
Yeah.
And so, like, even Paku's intent in those moments was really nice.
I thought it was just more subtle, which I appreciate.
And it is more of like, all right, what does misogyny look like
in
the best intent?
Exactly.
And how that can still come off. And then you get to this point later in the episode where he's like, look, they had women fighters in the Southern tribe, and look what happened. And it's like, all right, that's a fallacy, right?
It's rough.
That's not causation.
Yeah.
And so there's certain ways to challenge that. And so I really do appreciate that. But that, even when you're talking about additional presumptions in this episode.
For sure.
It is so common for children to assume that there is a place for them where they want to be.
Ooh,
right?
Isn't that awesome?
How awesome
is that,
like,
right?
I love that they have not experienced any barriers. So it's, Katara showing up in a space as like a 14-year-old and saying like, I can fight and I'm ready to fight and I'm ready to help. And then learn that those barriers exist is really disheartening.
Agreed.
And you see that in this moment, like what happens when kids show up to spaces assuming that they have a seat at the table and that moment of them learning and how crappy that feels. And so like for us, as we view that is how do we not let that happen? Right. Like there are certainly times where there are places where kids need to be and don't need to be. War.
Yeah.
Being one of like,
well, and that's what's fascinating about this whole thing is like, women can't fight. It's not 14-year-olds can't fight. It's women can't fight. And so it's one of those things where I'm sitting here going like, there's not one mention of like, no, we don't let children fight.
They're
like,
so ready to let the Avatar like, jump on this.
Like, it's just like, come on. Like there, that's where I like the shot at the, that's never mind. That's next episode. Mm. There's a shot at the end of next episode, spoiler alert, where like kids died. And we're sitting here going like, that wasn't the issue. Right? I'm just like, I just am really interested in that being an unfiltered choice.
The line
choice.
Of demarcation is
yeah.
gender.
Yeah. I don't know.
Out of it's, all the issues with war in general, right?
Exactly, so, right?
I think, but how often does that happen where, you know, I run a lot of youth programs, mm-hmm. and one of the best parts about that is sometimes kids haven't learned that they should have shame or fear of certain things.
Yeah, exactly.
Which makes them so prone to try new things and to learn stuff that they would never get a chance to try, right? Like
yeah.
the fear of failure doesn't necessarily exist in a child to a point that keeps them from trying until they learn that for the first time.
Well, which is why school environments are so pivotal in like shaping youth, right? And so a lot of time people have like learning scars, and that comes from teachers being like, I'm so glad that you're good at math because you're a terrible artist. Or, right, like, I'm so glad that you're good at X because you're really bad at this.
Stuff
and then
that they think is a compliment.
They're like, yeah. Or, like, it's just one of those things where, or they really love art, but they hate math, and you just told them they're a bad artist. And so now they're never going to draw again because that's the message they heard in the third grade,
mm-hmm.
right? And you stomp out their creativity because you're making a, to you, benign comment that is like a backwards compliment, but in reality, it's drastically creating this shame spiral for this person. And it's so easy to say something like that when you're presuming it doesn't matter to them, right? And so when you say things that don't matter to you, right, but you say something, you presume that that child doesn't care about it either. And
I said it flippantly. I just
it was just a joke.
It was just an off.
Which is why the terrible vitriol online of like it was just a joke is never a good argument. Like it's never a good excuse or reason to say things. Like it's just it's wild.
When people will tell you that you get like you're overthinking things or you're being too nitpicky on yourself,
you're
like,
you're
no,
too
this,
sensitive.
This is how dehumanization starts, right? This is the kernel or the seed that all those things slowly grow into.
Yeah.
And it starts with, oh, it was just a fat joke, or it was just a woman joke,
yep.
or it was just a, you know, a racial joke.
Yep.
And it's not a big deal, and you're overthinking things.
Yep.
Which is the same comment you got in the cartoon show when you talk about Iroh and June, right?
Exactly.
Like, oh, it's just
which I thought they shifted really well in this.
I agree.
Yeah. It was a little backwards. So, like, it was. I retract my statement. It was done better than.
It was done better than in the animated show. And so I think that it's a big presumption to think that your actions don't matter.
Yeah. That's a good. I think that's big too, right? That's a big point to think that they don't like it's and it's both because if you look at Zhao, it's the opposite to think that your actions matter so much that it's going to be this like I'm the best. I'm going to change the world, which frankly, he
did technically change the world.
He is on the path to do that, but not in the way that he's thinking. And then it's the other end of the spectrum of like to presume that your actions just are meaningless when in reality they mean a great deal. Because we can't assign meaning for other people.
It's really... There's a lot of presumption in this episode, even in the way that we tell stories. So if we're shifting to like Zhao and uh-huh. the events in there. When something like the blasting jelly blows up mm-hmm. Zuko's ship, to presume that he is dead...
Yeah, that's a
really,
big one.
...is a really big one. And they...
The rest of the episode,
let you
he's
know,
planning on
They
him.
Let you know so quickly that he is not.
Yeah.
And so, like, sometimes those presumptions can be really nipped. Like, you can kind of use those things that the audience is bringing to the table, the presumptions the audience
yeah,
has.
The dramatic irony.
Is to play with all of that. And I think the show lapsed in some of those moments in this episode.
Well, I thought it was really interesting. I was thinking about, again, I can't help but do this, but comparing it to the original when... It's almost as if Iroh was in on it from the beginning in the animated show, but in this one, it's not very apparent that he is. And so I'm not sure that he is. And it's also like, given that he is actually,
Zuko was incredibly surprised when he found the
exactly right. And so given that everybody was surprised, I think we missed out on having that reunion of like, no, I thought he was dead. I want to see that hug of where like, oh, you're alive. Whereas in the original, I didn't need it because it was like, we knew this was going to happen and we prepared for it. And I don't know. Like, I feel like I might be wrong about that, but like it's, I got that vibe, I guess. And so they're playing off of that. And I think there was a missed opportunity to get that reunion and to be like, all right, we got to pretend like you're still dead, and mm-hmm. having that kind of integration. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. I'm presuming my idea is better.
Yeah, but I agree. I think that that was you kind of get shortchanged on some of those things. It's interesting that the show is longer and arguably is getting more time.
Yeah.
Because they're really able to kind of cram three episodes
into
a single one.
Yeah.
And yet, I feel like you lose some of those aspects throughout the course of the episodes. Is that, yeah, like something that takes time to develop, you're skipping.
Yeah.
We can talk more about that next episode, too, because I have a moment in episode 8 that I also have a similar feeling with. But what is another moment of presumption for you?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I'm thinking about in general with this one is like we talked a little bit about Zhao, but and there's the presumption of, you know, his plan with Zuko worked, which we kind of mentioned already, but there's also this Zhao the Conqueror will be my name.
Calm down, Zhao.
Like, there's just he's already cashed in his winnings for what he thinks. You know what I mean? Like it's a don't count your chickens before they hatch. The pride cometh before the fall. But like all of those cliches are coming to my mind with him. And
especially when you think you know the outcome.
Exactly. And it's like we are
familiar
looking
with the show.
But even then, like even if you didn't know the outcome, this is a fairly predictable thing where like Zhao is the villain. He's going to fall to the hero. Right. And it's like, it's not a Game of Thrones situation where like everybody dies, right? This is one of those things where like it feels as though that's a very predictable outcome. Now, yeah, the way we get there might be less predictable, but like the villain will fall to the hero. That's the story.
That's a presumption we make.
It's, yeah,
right.
But because that is such a common trait in these shows, like the fun, the joy, the interest comes from how will they get there. And I find this to be a really interesting situation in that Zhao is like, he is, I think what's interesting about it is the audience theoretically doesn't know how he has thinks he won until it's revealed. And so we're sitting here going like, why does he think he has this in the bag? Why does he think he has this in the bag? And then all of a sudden you realize he's going to do what? And that's what's interesting about it. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the presumption is like, we know he's going to lose. And then you're like, oh, he's going to what? And so it's interesting, you know, I just find it somewhat compelling, even in as annoying as it is.
Yeah. I mean, and that's, how often do we have presumptions that like, all right, we've set ourselves up for this promotion, this thing.
Yeah.
Whatever it is. Then you don't get it.
Yep.
And then how does that turn into a shame spiral and everything else? And so it really does, having expectations and hopes, you know, and here's a question. What's the difference between a hope and a dream?
Yeah.
And then the presumption, and how that affects you when those things don't happen. And I think part of it, if I'm going to answer my own question, is the feeling of ownership over that thing already. The feeling of
entitlement
that comes with that. And is that the difference between presumption and a dream?
Well, and I think like maybe not a dream, but I think hope in particular is interesting because I think underlying hope is, I hope that to be true means that there is an element of doubt. Yeah. Whereas with presumption, it doesn't feel like there's any doubt.
It is deserved. It is mine. It is.
Yeah. I've already planned based off of this fact that is not true, right? I've already put all of my, you know, bets down on this because I believe it to be true when in fact it is not. Whereas Hope has this sense of, I might not be right, but I hope I am, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So again, doubt to the rescue over certainty, right?
Mm-hmm.
Big fan. But yeah, I think that's a
little humility.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe a dream is like, yeah, I hope, like, I feel like that's a similar argument for I'm dreaming of this is like
it's
this
hope. That's right. It's just, yeah, it's this feeling of wanting it, but yeah, recognizing that it may not come true.
Yeah. Speaking of dreams, can we talk about Kuruk for a minute?
Sure.
Kuruk's a sad, angry boy.
Yeah, me too.
You wanted more from him.
I want a 10-episode horror show with Kuruk fighting dark spirits, and I want it now.
Well, and how did we, like, and I think we get that, right? We get the look of, like, look at his body, look at what happened to him.
I want that story. Give it to me now. Yeah. I want the world.
Well, and what's interesting about all of the avatars in this version is all of the past lives are super presumptive. They are all projecting their experience onto Aang.
Can't have friends, Aang.
Yeah, you can't have friends because I lost the one truth, like, person that I loved and cared about.
Because you weren't a good avatar, Kuruk. Well,
and, like, I, like, in Kiyoshi's the same way. Like, you have to be the one. You have to be the one. And it's like, this, there's a lot of presumption that Aang cannot be different from them.
Right.
And it's really interesting to me to, like, we see a lot of flaws from these avatars that we don't necessarily see in the animated show, which I don't, like, I don't hate that.
No.
It's just a very interesting take.
How do you, you know, a lot of times if we're forming presumptions and opinions and ideas based off of historical experience, then the avatars got so much historical experience.
Right, yeah.
And so the question then also becomes, like, how do you sometimes push back about the, it's always been this way, no matter what.
Popular.
And they're not wrong, because yeah, that historical knowledge is there. But then how do you say, but it can be better, or
yeah,
it can be different? And that's a really tough question to ask when you're making these presumptions. It won't work. When you do this, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, maybe not then, but the context is a little different now. And
well, and it's so interesting because, like, as a leader and working with people who bring you ideas that you're like, oh no, don't do that.
Well, but
bad idea.
And then sometimes you go, but I'm going to let you try it, because if you make it work, then
yeah,
that's exciting.
Yes.
And you're excited about it. And if you don't, maybe you've learned, there's a lesson potentially to be learned from that in terms of, like, how you navigate the next thing in your future.
Well, and I think that's the difference is, like, as an organization, as a group, as a whomever I'm leading, are we at a place where I can, where this is, we can allow for this to be a mistake?
Yeah.
Right. And if the answer is yes, then you should absolutely, I think, for everyone's benefit, help them fail. Right. And help them, like, along until they fail, and, like, coach them and help them understand and, like, learn with them about what they learned and things along those lines. But there are some times where, like, war, for instance, where you're like, nope, we're not gonna play with anything new right now. We're gonna do with what we know.
Because the mistake, right, could be lives.
Well, and that's the thing though. Paku and Yagoda and all of this, like, I want to fight material. We're on the brink of war, and so it, in a way, I'm sitting here going with Paku, being like, your argument would have been way more compelling if it was like about also protecting kids. But again, like, it was never like there are too many the argument was never there are too many lives on the line. The argument was never, it was always, no, this is how it's always been done and women are weak. It was never like the arguments weren't good, right? And I don't know, I just, there's a, we're presuming the wrong things.
Yeah.
Like, if you're gonna presume about why somebody wants to do something, like, where are your morals and values situated? Because we get where people's morals and values are located in their arguments about certain things.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, this is why you care about that, is a lot more like, I really understand where you're coming from. That makes a lot of sense. I get you wouldn't want children to be in a battle right now. I agree with you.
Right.
Versus, no, women are weak. I'm like, wrong argument.
And we already had this fight thing, and
But
to stay with Kuruk real quick, though.
Yeah.
What is it like to be on the receiving end of an assumption or presumption?
For his entire life.
Well, you know, you can do this. Kiyoshi did it. Kiyoshi transformed into me and taught me to be a fighter. You can do this. And it's this place of like, when someone is expecting so much of you and you're like, I literally can't.
Yeah.
And the disappointment. And so like,
it's the same thing. That,
not only are you disappointed when you're presuming things of other people and then they don't meet your expectations.
Yeah.
There's also a disappointment the one on the receiving end is feeling when I'm not living up to the expectations that you had, whether they're realistic or not.
Well, and that's the same thing that happened with Paku and Arno talking to Aang about wanting to be like this spearheading this combat situation. It's like, we believe that you have all this capacity to do X, Y, and Z. And Aang's like, nope.
And,
like,
and then he turns around and puts that same presumption on someone
exactly.
else.
Exactly. Yes. And like, how realistic is that of like, oh, this is, it's not something where we realize we're doing it. It's, I realize that I'm out of options and you're my only hope. And I've already made plans based off of that, like, out of that devastation, out of that despair, out of that thinking that there's no other option. I've already started planning because I would lose hope if I didn't make plans based off of this presumption, right? And that's where it's really difficult. That's like when you start hitting rock bottom is right around there. Mm-hmm. And then we see Aang's reaction after his conversation with Kuruk, with Katara. Katara's like, listen, they said women can't fight. And Aang's like, maybe you shouldn't. But I think he had just gotten slammed twice.
Yep.
Right? He got slammed by Arnok and Paku, and then he got slammed by Kuruk, and that's on top of the message he had from Kiyoshi. And I think that he just got, it was the straw that, you know, metaphorically speaking, broke the camel's back.
But we see this, though, in parents.
Oh, yeah.
My kid's going to be valedictorian. My kid's going to play in the MLB. My kid's going to be an all-star hockey player. What, like,
they're going to master cello by the age of seven.
And then they don't. But the child still feels this just sense of, I have to or else.
Yeah.
Because if I'm not good enough. And what does that mean for me? And
yep.
And so you put these expectations on people, and hear me, there's nothing wrong with stretch goals. There's nothing wrong with pushing yourself to try something new and to fail or succeed and celebrate those things or learn from those things. But this idea of like, nope, you're going to be a valedictorian and you have to bust your butt every day to become a valedictorian. Well, if that's just not where a child's capabilities are, then like, it's just a life of disappointment and trauma
for everyone
involved. You're mad. And so it's just like, how do you appropriately just set meaningful goals and allow people to be the best people they're going to be without putting these presumptions onto what you think they should be or the expectation should be.
And that's what's so hard about just being the Avatar in general, is that everyone has expectations of you. Everyone believes that you should be a certain way and makes plans around that, right? The Avatar is going to do this.
I mean, not even just the Avatar, you, like you as an individual, right?
Well,
like,
yeah.
In the other side of this too, is Aang is now feeling bad because he probably feels this sense of, I should be able to waterbend by now.
Yeah.
Right? I should have this house by now. I should have this salary by now.
It'd be nice to have a salary.
I should be in this position. And we've already talked, you know, at some point in our history of the show about the language of should.
Oh, yeah.
Right? As that being a red flag. I should have this thing. I should be able to do this. Like, that's a red flag, you know, kind of marker. And so that's what we're doing when we're pushing presumptions onto people and ourselves. And as much as we push it on to other people, how often do we push it on ourselves? And the answer is a lot. Like,
and the answer is often without our own realization. We don't even know we're doing it, right?
Well, and Zuko does a lot of this throughout the course of this season. And it's not, it's, yes, he's been told you need to go find the Avatar.
Yep.
And that's what he feels is going to get him back in good graces.
Yeah.
But then it's this constant self push of, well, I should be here. I should be doing this thing.
I have to do this. Yeah.
And Iroh is spending so much of his time like, do you?
Are you sure?
Like,
yeah.
You can go have some tea.
Yeah. We maybe could just relax.
We don't have to hang here. And so you start to see what that trauma of presumptions really does when it's embedded.
The trauma of presumption, the title of this episode. Here. Yeah. My only other note is with Han.
I like Han.
Big change.
Yeah.
Big change. I'm like, oh, he's kind of like
he comes up to Sokka
and,
hey, you know so much.
Yeah.
And Han's like, that's a big presumption. Guess I do. But yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Well, it's like, and it's just like, wow. So we get this, you know, really tall, like clearly, like, you know, generally attractive, like, and he's like the, you know, belle of the ball, so to speak. And he's like, Sokka, you're the one. You know it all. Sokka, you, like, Yue was with me, but I, like, there's just this, like, laying it on thick for this person who you, again, because of our prior notion of this character in another context, was expecting something completely different. And that really is like, oh, this is a big change.
I like it.
And it's interesting, right? It's, and it plays off really well because it really makes you like him. It makes you feel like, oh, like, why would Yue leave this guy?
No.
And, oh, now we see. And
she's, because so, she's the moon.
Yeah. Yeah. So, interesting.
And so the question that I have coming from that moment is like, hey, his presumption really worked. It made Sokka feel good. It made Sokka feel empowered. So, like, can't presumptions be good sometimes? And what's the argument for that conversation? What is the, what's the, where do you land on that question?
Well, I think the difference with this is how it's handled, in the sense that with Aang and Kurok, with Arnok, Paku, and Aang, and like with Iroh, with everybody else, it's this sense of, not only have I, you know, started making plans based off what I have assumed, but I'm also wrong, and now I'm disappointed, and I'm going to blame you for it.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of, I was wrong, I'm going to blame you for it, it's, oh, okay. Like making it not like, it's not your fault that my presumption was wrong. I can presume and presume well of someone and then be like, oh, well, it's not your fault that like my presumption was wrong. And so how do we approach our own questions of like, oh, I thought you'd be really good at this. And
that's on me.
That's on me.
Which still can feel bad.
You. Yeah. But
I thought,
like,
you were going to be good at this. And you're not.
But you wouldn't say it like that.
That's my fault.
That's
not you.
Yeah. But you wouldn't say it like that.
Hopefully. Some people absolutely would.
Yeah.
But the other side of this, too, that I think that Han does is he invites Sokka into the shared pool of meaning to kind of confirm before doing all this, right?
That buzzword.
That's right. Shared pool of meaning.
That's a waterbending term. The shared pool of meaning.
That's right. Do the Fire Nation soldiers still wear this? Well, no, they actually wear leather and this is what they look like now. That's really great intel. Let's go share that with the team.
Yeah.
You're confirming things. You're asking for that expertise prior. You're getting to know Sokka and what he brings to the table.
Yeah.
And then you're saying, hey, that's actually super important. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go take that to the team. I thought you had knowledge and you do. Let's go do it. And so, you got to get to know people, right? You got to have an understanding. But for everything, whatever your expectation is of a situation, that expectation either has to be made clear that that's what you're hoping for from an event, from a situation.
Clear is kind.
And if it's not, then, like, who can possibly meet it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, use whatever metaphor you want. You got to have the destination in mind to know how to get there, right?
How do you get from here to there?
You got to know where you're going.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, you know, hey, my expectation is I'm coming home and these are the things that we're going to do. And I can't do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
And then, great, people have the opportunity to meet that expectation at that point. It's no longer a presumption. It's something that has been made explicit as opposed to implicit.
Yep.
And,
well, and that's a lot of, like, frankly, a lot of work in organizations that do really well.
Work in relationships.
It is saying, hey, I'm sure that everybody's aware of this already, but I want to make it clear that this is the expectation. And they're like, oh, I was going into it thinking this. Like, how do you mitigate the potential for presumption when it will likely, like, it is, hey, there is potential for you to presume that this is what I meant. I would like to clear that up by telling you what I meant. And, like, how do we do that in organizations on a mass level where there are so many different ways for presumptions to be made?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many different cracks in the communication line that, I'm just going to go forward doing this because I haven't heard, and it's just because you didn't read your email.
Yeah.
Right? And so how do we say, hey, did you read your email? Like literally, what are the ways that we can follow up to make sure communication has been had to remove the possibility of poor presumption? Right?
Yeah.
That's what my head thinks about when I'm thinking about organizational leadership.
Yeah. We need to go to break.
We should do that.
Before we do, we have not touched on Azula.
Azula!
And the presumption that she has that her dad is a fair and well-intentioned human being.
Yeah. Yeah. Turns out, he's not. He's a terrible human.
Every time someone's like, he's playing with you, she's like, send them all. I'll fight them all. And you're like, yeah, he's toying with you.
Well, it's interesting, right? Like, he's, like, literally baiting her. And it's just, what a weird way to parent.
Yeah.
It's
not really the Gerber method.
Yeah. This is not, you know, like, gentle parenting.
And I think there's, you kind of get elements of, like, what does she presume that she's supposed to have or should have at this point? She is presuming that her father cares about her.
Yeah.
Whether she knows he cares about others is probably, she knows that he doesn't. But you still have this hope that he cares about you.
Yeah.
And does he?
I feel like
that has not been made clear.
It feels like the story that she's telling herself is that he keeps on using Zuko as a means of being like, Zuko's still around. I'm probably going to crown him, not you. Zuko's done this. What are you doing? And this little bug in her ear that is just like eating her alive. And there is zero contentment with I'm here. He's gone. I'm clearly the choice, right? It's like, no, he is continually putting her down so that she feels like she has to keep working for it. And talk about manipulation. Right.
Well, and that even brings up the other question, because we've talked so much about like not feeling like you're owed things, right? Like not feeling like you deserve this thing or the sense of entitlement.
And she doesn't.
However,
right.
What's the balance of like, no, I'm good enough.
Yeah.
Right. Like
I'm enough for this.
I'm enough for this. And so what's the understanding of you can't feel like you are owed everything or even owed some things. And then there are some things you can say, I'm owed this.
There are certain inalienable rights
I'm
of human beings.
Right. Like, I'm owed dignity.
Yes.
I'm owed, you know,
yeah,
speaking too kindly, whatever it might be, right? Like, there are certain things that, so how do you balance the two of those ideals in the same sphere? Because we've seen Zhao.
Yeah.
I deserve all of this.
Zhao the Conqueror.
And Azula, who is in a place of, I think I deserve this, but like, I'm going to keep working hard until I earn it type deal.
Yeah.
And I'll fight all of the inmates and.
Yeah. Cause I know I can.
And the balance between that.
Yep.
Which is like two villains. How do you balance between to make them more, you know, emotionally stable? And
yeah.
I don't know if I have the answer for that, but
me either.
We're going to take a quick break and we will come back with our other little sections of the show. We'll be right back.
Come on.
And we are back from our break. We're jumping straight into Twee-in-Law. What was something that pushed you away and pulled you in about this episode?
All right. I'll start with pushed away, since that's where you started. I found one of the things I was looking forward to just to see how it would go was this fight between Katara and Paku. And there were moments of it. I was like, that was a really neat homage to the original where, you know, we have this like ice sheet right in front of Paku where he sees his reflection. I think that was a neat little moment. But generally speaking, I found that fight to be super boring.
I think the more and more I watch, firebending lends itself better to live action hand-to-hand combat.
Yep.
And is more exciting. But bending itself is still something that is really tough to master in a live action medium.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's worth continuing to try.
Yeah.
It just may be better equipped for
animated style.
It's like why you know Spider-Verse
so good.
Looks so good.
Yeah.
Because it's animated.
Yeah.
Like that is it would not look nearly as good or as impressive.
Yeah.
If you tried to make it live action. And so I think that's like You open yourself up to more opportunities, and I think we've seen over the last 20 years really interesting fight sequences, and they got better with The Legend of Korra.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't think I've ever seen anything in a live-action setting that has looked or felt as cool as some of those moments.
Yeah, agreed. I have one more thing for this, and then I'll go to things that I liked. The other thing was I found there was a moment with Princess Yue that really felt off-putting. And that was the moment where, you know, she's with Sokka and they're talking about all of Sokka's presumptions, right? I thought you were going to be this, you know, a princess. And that meant you were going to be, you know, not ordinary. And that meant you were going to be this. And he's like digging himself into a hole. But she responds by saying, yeah, well, I act all, you know, and then she does the hand sign for like namaste and as a like spiritual. And it was like this. Like, one, that hand sign doesn't exist in this world very much. And so, like, I'm sitting here going, like, we literally see other people doing other, like, we see Aang with his fist to his palm when he bows. We see other hand signs and motions to symbol, like, spirituality in this world. And so, one, that felt out of place. And two, that felt very, I don't know, like, it felt awkward to me. Like it felt, I don't know, like she was trying to mocking it.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it felt like really icky to me. So I haven't quite articulated what exactly I feel about it, but that moment to me is still sitting in a not great moment. That's how I'm. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
I'll be honest. I wasn't paying attention enough to catch that because for a show to be this long,
yeah,
it is also proving to be a little bit more slower than I would want it to be.
Yeah.
And I like a good slow burn when the content's engaging, and I just don't know, it feels like they're focusing their length of time in moments that aren't as important.
Yes.
And then jumping and trying to like force emotional feels for things that you haven't built up the time for.
Yeah.
And that's been a theme through the entire show is their hope, you know, it feels as if the creators are hoping that you bringing this prior knowledge to the show.
Yep.
To warrant all the emotional pulls.
Momo, for instance.
Which is next episode.
Yeah.
And I feel like they haven't earned it a lot. And so like some of these moments I'm like, I think I texted you while watching the show again last night, and I was just like, I'm bored.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, I never, even in episodes where people will complain about The Great Divide.
Yeah.
I was still very much dialed into that and was not necessarily bored of those things. And so, yeah.
All right. Well,
I'm just not, so that's probably what pushed me away, pulled me in. I like things like the changes like Han. That was a good change.
I agree.
I think shifting from the pirates don't exist in this story, and so shifting to the blasting jelly on the skate boat was like that felt like a good natural transition and change that made a lot of sense, and I enjoyed that aspect of it. But then again, Zuko's back to us so quickly, and it feels like we're missing this, like, Iroh-Zuko exchange.
Yeah.
And so, you know, those are the things.
I also thought that the change around, we talked about this a little bit earlier, but the subtlety around, like, the gendered roles and how that message was delivered, I thought was really done well.
Yeah, I agree.
I thought that was a big change that was tactfully done.
Well, it's interesting, you know, a lot of times if you're scrolling on TikTok and stuff, you'll sometimes see these videos that have very, like, they're skits that are being filmed that maybe aren't filmed the best, but they exist, and it's always very overt misogyny or overt racism that they're trying to convey in these skits and being like, what would you do? And it's one of the reasons I don't like the show What Would You Do, is because typically they try to put people in situations that are like with actors around in a cafe, but it's always like relatively overt things. And I recognize that that's not necessarily, even when things are overt, doesn't mean they're confronted.
Yeah.
But when things are kind of, it allows for people to point to say, well, I don't do that.
Yeah.
And
so
I'm not a misogynist. I don't do that.
Yeah.
Or I can't be racist. I don't do that.
Yep.
And the reality is, when you get to see examples of what those kind of more nuanced microaggressions can look like, it allows you to kind of talk about, like, Paku seems like he's got the best intent.
Yeah.
In wanting to support Katara. And there's this underlying theme of, like, but women can't do things.
It's a solid red flag, generally speaking, if someone says, I'm not a, like, and you name it, and, like, ism, and it's just like, oh.
So to your point, it's when you get those more nuanced takes, and you can be like, no, this is still misogyny, and this is how it can show up in the world around you, and this is why it feels that way. I like when those examples are there.
It's more complex. It's more interesting.
Yep.
The way that it's handled and Katara's response to it becomes more impactful. Like, all of it becomes better because of that change.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah. All right.
Let's talk about our devotion.
We're talking about the element of fire.
Fire is our element through the lens of presumption.
Presumption.
What is something you want to work on this upcoming week?
Yeah, you know, what I was thinking about with this is the idea of, you know, we've talked about all kinds of metaphors around this over the years, but, you know, certain things keep coming back. And the idea of, you know, you have a fire in a fire pit, and when left untended, it becomes very dangerous, right? And so,
I think we've said something like that before.
Yeah. And so what happens is, if I go inside and I presume that someone else is going to be tending it while I'm gone, that is, there's a lot of trust there.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is, it's like, oh, I forgot they had to leave, and they left, and I went inside, and I was gone for 30 minutes, and now there's a fire outside that is going to burn something down. And so there's this element of, like, when there are things that are in jeopardy, I need to make sure that I'm dotting my I's and crossing my T's. And so, like, recognizing what could be dangerous and not becoming complacent around certain things. And the example that comes to mind for me is around, like, certain comments that are made to people around me that I, you know, will say a joke that I think is a benign comment, and then I realize that that person's not talking to me nearly as much, and they're, you know, acting more distant, and I lean in for, you know, hey, by the way, and they, like, walk away from me. I'm like, oh, fire spreading. I need to put this out now or figure out, like, and so, like, hey, rather than continuing to let this fire spread, I can we talk about, like, frankly, the unfiltered is, can we talk about the presumption you made about the comment that I made? Or, and then it's like, oh, you said this and you didn't mean it that way. No. Or it's, I said that and you took it that way. I'm like, oh, I had no idea. My bad.
My presumption was that you would take it as a joke.
Exactly. Yeah. And so there's room for presumption in that situation from both sides. And I just want to figure out, like, is it me? or is it you? And either way, can we fix this so that it's not burning?
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking about.
Nice. I'm working to support a lot of staff as we're in youth programs for the summer. And, yeah, and part of that is the presumption that people know everything. Like, people know what they're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Or that everyone has the skill set, or that I have the skill set, or have shared the things that I need to share.
That seems like common sense.
And so I kind of thought of it from this idea of not making the presumption that, like, one way of teaching works for everybody, or yeah, one way of sharing information works for everybody.
That's good.
And so I started thinking of, like, cooking. Like, the amount of heat that I like presenting into a cooking space. You know, the way that you cook bacon, I'm a low and slow type of person.
Oh, yeah.
But that doesn't mean that's the way that, you know, you have to cook other things, like when you're searing a steak, right? Like,
oh, yeah, high
heat,
ripping
right?
Hot.
And so I think the lessons I can take from that is, like, the heat that needs to be applied to every situation has to vary, and I have to have enough knowledge of what that thing is needing.
Turns out,
to be successful,
people don't have a lot of knowledge around cooking,
and so it's often not making presumptions that that child knows what they're supposed to be doing in this moment, or that staff member knows what they're supposed to be doing, or that I have all the right answers. Sometimes that's one of the most dangerous presumptions, is that, like, I'm not gonna burn the steak, or I'm not gonna burn the chicken.
Yeah.
And the reality is, like, no, I overcooked it, right? And so it's checking all of those things, and that comes from asking questions and being humble enough to look up the right answers, and being humble enough to admit that I made a mistake the last time I cooked this chicken and need to, like, learn how to do it better in the future. And so I think that's kind of where my mind is at, is how am I understanding that each situation is different and setting myself up for success and best supporting other people through humility and not making presumptions of what they already should or do know.
Yeah. So many ways to mess up a hard-boiled egg.
I just wish I didn't have to crack them. Like, I don't like peeling.
Yeah, pain in the butt.
I just wish I could hard-boil an egg and pull it out of the water.
And eat it.
And then...
Turns out.
Same reason I don't like wings. I don't want to mess with the bones.
Wings. God, I love them.
Just,
so good.
Just give me the chicken nugget.
No.
Just put it in the same sauce. Bruh. Just give me the... It's a funny
it's
shape.
It's an experience.
Shape it like a wing. Put it in the same sauce and let me just
shape
eat it.
Shape it like a wing.
I have no illusions of what boneless wings are. They're just fancy chicken nuggets, and I'm fine with that.
Yeah. Anyway.
I don't have to waste my time or get my hands messy.
Speaking of things we're grateful for.
Grateful for boneless wings.
Grateful for regular wings. And that's the end of our show. Who's a character that you're grateful for?
Katara.
Big fan.
Yeah. The way she handles Yagoda and the way that they talk to each other is one that is still filled with respect and, like, honoring what Yagoda is bringing to the table, while also saying, and here's...
This is where my strengths lie.
This is where I want to do and where my strengths lie. And I love that.
Yeah. Really love solid. That. Big fan.
So I just appreciate when people do that and do that well.
Well, and I appreciate too, like, one of the things that, speaking of presumption, Katara and Sokka, like, she goes to Sokka thinking he's going to talk her down, thinking that he's going to be like, no, don't do this, don't do that. No, it's a bad idea to attack Master Paku. And Sokka's like, no, kick his ass. And I really am grateful for Sokka for that moment, right? Sokka is very supportive, and he's like, even at the end, he's like, she says she lost. And he's like, did you? And, you know, like, there's just...
Like, what was the point of the fight? Like, what was the goal of the fight?
Exactly. And I just thought, like, I think Sokka might be my favorite person in, like...
In this version of the show.
In this version of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think Zuko's very good, but I like Sokka a lot.
The performance, you know, from a performance standpoint, I think Zuko is probably the shining star for me throughout this entire show.
Yeah.
I think he's the one that is bringing the most balanced and thoughtful performance to the table.
Yeah.
He also is taking these lines of dialogue that I feel like are very choppy. Yeah. And, like, he's really chewing on them in a nice way. And I don't think that every person is... doing that, but I also think the writing is choppy. I think the writing is choppy in a lot of situations.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah.
But what I will say is I really, this makes me want to go back and watch the animated show.
Oh, it's so good.
It is so good.
Ugh, always worth rewatching that.
Well, one more episode left. We're almost there.
Woo!
Y'all, follow us on the socials, BNB_pod.
Yep. And
Ben's still doing live episodes over on our Patreon.
It's true. We just did the Avatar and the Fire Lord this month. What a great episode.
We're going on 3 or so years of meeting monthly.
Isn't that
for
wild?
Live episodes, which is really cool. Yeah. So Ben's still holding down the fort on that end. And so go jump over on Patreon. And other than that, I'm Sunshine.
I'm Ben.
And this has been Bending, Not Breaking. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye.